A Jonjo header, a Van Veen penalty and backs to the wall defending can only mean one thing. We're riding the Keith Kerr wave.
Brain again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup and Northampton 3!
Yeah!
Hello and welcome once again to It's All Cobblers to Me with me, Charles, Danny and Neil. Hi guys, how are you?
Hello, evening. Good, you right?
Good, thanks.
Good stuff. As Adrian on Twitter pointed out this week, we're delighted that since we started this podcast, the form of the team has improved. And I know Neil would like to take a lot of the credit for that, wouldn't you, mate?
Absolutely, Charles. I think our positivity is reverberating around the town and the club itself. And I think we're due probably quite a lot of kudos for our efforts in turning the season around.
So since last week, this happened.
Vane back across.
Here it is. Goal!
The ball's the back post. And it's gone in. And O'Toole has gone for the Cobblers. It was a mighty scramble. But O'Toole has rose highest at the far post to poke it in past the dive of Daniel Iverson. Buchanan from the right-hand side towards the six-yard box. Von Veen hashes it at the goal, and the referee has given a penalty. Christopher Brax, Charles Braxbeer, points at the spot. Referee blows his whistle. Von Veen right-footed scores. Slides it to the left of the goalkeeper. And the Cobblers may have 10 men, but they have a two-goal lead here at the PTS.
So I actually wanted to just use this opportunity to apologise for my defeatist attitude on last week's podcast when I predicted a bump back down to earth defeat for the town. I promise it won't happen again. So before we get to the goals and the performance then, there were a lot of unhappy voices on Saturday about the decision to send off Sam Foley. But what were your thoughts, Danny?
To put it mildly, he had an absolute shocker, didn't he? Old Mr. Brakespeare, was it? I think his name was. I think we'll be remembering his name a lot more in the weeks to come and looking out for his name. He just had an absolute mare of a game for both teams, I think. We didn't think it was a red card at all. I couldn't see what he was doing for our penalty, and he just made it all about himself. Real shocker.
Now, you could tell, couldn't you? Look, he got so many decisions wrong. Even little decisions, little niggly free kicks here or there, throw-ins, which is not all down to him, some of it's the linesman, right? But little niggly free kicks here or there, corners and stuff. And the sending off, I thought, was ridiculous. But I guess in hindsight, looking back at the replay a little bit in real time, maybe you could kind of justify why he thought it was a high challenge and a bit dangerous. But I think the penalty he gave for us, they had a similar one. Or a similar handball situation in the first half, actually. I think it was in the first 10 minutes, which looked more of a penalty than ours. And it's just that consistency, isn't it? And I saw somebody say the other day that he was consistent, but just consistently rubbish, which is a concern. But yeah, he wasn't good, was he?
I think the thing for me, at least he was bad for both teams. You know, it wasn't just Cobblers fans moaning at the end of the game. It was Oldham fans as well. The Oldham manager had a pop at him. It's not like it was just us. Okay, we were the only ones that got a sending off in the game. But I don't think it necessarily helps once that happens. Fans always then start thinking, well, he's got to even it up at some point, send off an Oldham player. Sam Hoskins went down and got brought down not long after Foley had been sent off. And the whole of the West Stand were on their feet, baying for blood. And yet, it was quite clearly only a yellow card offence. I think it becomes a really, really... a rod for his own back, really, for the referee at that point. He's sent a player off for, you know, the fans in the pitch who are watching it don't quite see what was wrong with the tackle. And that means every single decision he makes from then on is going to be highlighted even more by the fans and scrutinised as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said to the people around me when the sending off happened a couple of minutes later. I said, he's going to even that up in the end, and he did with the penalty. Still, like I said earlier, I still can't see what he gave it for. I don't know if it's been explained or not, but... just all in all, he just made everything about himself, and it's just not good to have that atmosphere around, really, is it, when everything's gearing towards the referee's performance.
The club tweeted a picture, or a couple of pictures of the game on Saturday, one of which was supposedly supposed to show why the penalty was given. And I might need to go back and look at it again. Maybe I missed it, but it didn't look very clear to me. It wasn't as if it was a clear, oh yeah, that's obviously a handball. It was pretty ropey.
Yeah. He's the type of person that you can imagine is, well, he's probably not going to be listening to this, but if he did listen to this, he'd be like, oh yeah, spent the first 10 minutes talking about me and still living it up on it. And should we talk about the performance instead?
Yeah, I think so. So let's talk about how the game started then. We were definitely the second best team for at least the first 10 minutes, weren't we?
Yeah. I think the first 15 minutes or so, Oldham were on top. I was a bit worried about them. They're coming forward. They look pretty handy. They had a few powerful strikers and they were causing us quite a few problems, but seemed to settle down after a while. And I think the goal just completely turned the first half around in our favour.
It was a bit of a surprise, actually. Well, not a surprise that we started slowly, I guess, after winning 5-0 in the week. But I thought it was a bit of a surprise. Keith Cale said, didn't he, afterwards in his interview, that it was no surprise to him and he fully expected that. And in my mind, if you expect that coming and stuff, try and plan for that, I guess, in a way. And I'm sure he did, and I'm sure he tried everything under the sun to ensure it didn't happen. And maybe it's just a given that that's what happens in football. I don't know, but it just seemed a bit of a strange thing to say, I thought.
I think what he maybe means is that he expects to get the onslaught from them, so therefore he sets the stall out of the team to go out and be aware of that's going to happen, soak that pressure up for that 10-15 minute period, get through it, still at 0-0, and then you can start playing your football. Which I think is what we ended up doing. I mean, you know, we do get a goal relatively against the run of play, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. It was a bit out of the blue a little bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it just kind of happened. And even I was listening to it on the radio and it sounded to me like the ball had only just crossed the line or somehow only just managed to be poked home. I mean, when you then watch the actual goal itself on the TV highlights, you kind of see that whereas, you know, it was a decent header and a clear enough header. You wonder whether the commentary maybe were in a bad position to be able to see it being so far away from the goal at the time. But it was a decent enough header and obviously, you know, beats the keeper easily enough.
Yeah, I was in the East Stand on Saturday. And to be fair, I could tell it clearly went over the line, but it was one of those where I wasn't sure initially whether it was going to be given. There was that split second of sort of the Cobblers players almost appealing for it as a goal. And I was like, oh, here we go. He's not going to give this. So I kind of guess, especially where the commentary guys are in the West Stand right at the top and stuff, it's probably quite difficult to see from there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Plus you're looking through a whole bunch of bodies because it was the East Stand side of the pitch, wasn't it, that John Joe actually rose from to nod it home into that side of the goal as well. But I mean, then obviously we get Sam Foley sent off. We're probably all at that point thinking, oh, here we go. We're definitely probably going to, you know, at best be able to come out with a draw here. But then we get a penalty. And again, we've already talked about it a little bit, about how, you know, no one really could tell what it was. No one could really tell what it was given for at the time. Apparently handball. But Van Veen stuck it away very nicely, didn't he?
He did. It was wasn't complex at all, was it? By any means. he's got the calmness in front of goal, and in that situation is, it seems like he's done it quite a few times before. He did it against Cheltenham as well. He's ticking along in the goal scoring stakes, and good to see him stick that one away as well. And you still kind of had a feeling that there was something coming in the second half that you knew it was never going to be a straightforward 2-0 win, especially with the 10 men.
I mean, do you think Oldham probably felt hard done by, you know, going in at half time?
Who cares, Charles?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I just kind of thought at half time, I was like, well, great, we've got to half time. We've got a 2-0 lead, which is, you know, you're thinking to yourself, even with, you know, 11v11, you're thinking, well, that's really good against a team like Oldham, who we've struggled to beat on so many occasions in the past. But to go in 2-0 up down to 10 men, you're kind of fearing the worst even so, aren't you?
Yeah, you definitely are.
Did your mum feel hard done by Neil?
She had a right turnaround during the game, I must be honest. And towards the end of the game, she was saying, oh, I really hope Cobblers win this. So That's an extra fan for us, although I'm probably not going to take her very often because she was quite annoying during the game. Referee! Referee! That's all I heard.
The one thing that I was quite impressed with was again, Keith Curl and his actual management of the game. As soon as the sending off happens, he changes the formation around, and sticks, I think, was it Van Veen? Did he actually go to right midfield so that we sort of went 4-4-1? And then in the second half, he brings a Doffin on, puts him at right back, and then pushes Sean McWilliams forward into what we perceive as being his best position in central midfield. I thought the game management from Curl on the sidelines to actually make those changes, and then obviously the players carrying out that plan, worked an absolute treat. Yes, okay, we then go and, you know, we do concede a very, very scrappy goal in the second half, but it never felt like, listening to the game on the radio, that we were actually in any trouble until that goal was scored. It was kind of like, oh no, they've got one. Will that be now the impetus for them to go forward and get another one and then possibly a winner after that?
I don't know how you felt watching it, Danny, but I always felt relatively comfortable. I mean, they had a lot of possession, but a lot of their play was in front of our sort of midfield and defence, and they didn't really get behind us much, or when they did, their crossing was pretty poor. I never felt that they were going to be capable of, like, you know, cutting us apart or anything like that. It was a bit backs to the wall, but it wasn't the Alamo or anything like that. It was just 11 men against 10 men. They naturally had more of the ball, and we were happy to sit back and say, come on then, break us down, and they weren't able to.
I think we're seeing again from Curl, it's not the first time we've said it, his tactics just spot on. And you can tell, like, just straight, as soon as we had the players sent off, we could tell he's got a plan, and the players responded to that plan, and they knew where they were going, they knew what position they were going to go in straight away. It wasn't like they're all over the place trying to find out where they're supposed to be going. Everyone knew their role, everyone knew what to do, and essentially we were playing 4-5-0 at some points, and just using the pace that we had on the break to sort of pick them off, and we could have scored a third goal, and Crooks had a great chance to stick one away, which would have made it 3-1, I think. But I agree, Neil. We just never looked like letting it cave in. Apart from the last few minutes, I thought the last sort of couple of minutes, you always feel a bit nervous. But yeah, again, Curl's tactics just really, really spot on, and you did experience the shining through with him.
And if you look, if you think about it, if you think that how the players were performing under Dean Austin, even in terms of effort or what you perceive as what looks like their effort levels on Saturday, you couldn't fault any one of the team and say they've not put in a shift, they've not given their all. And that's all we ever asked for, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a shame in a way that you kind of look at it and go, you know, that Dean Austin couldn't get that same amount of that same level of effort out of the players. But I think it just goes to show that the change was done at the right time, and it was the right change. I mean, we'll probably be sitting here at the end of the season or the start of next year calling for Keith Curl's head, but that's the life of a Cobblers fan, it seems, over the last couple of years, isn't it?
Yes.
Good. So Sam Foley's obviously now going to miss 3 games. It's going to be a big loss, isn't it, to the side? He's been one of those standout players, I think, in the last, well, 4 or 5 games now, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's been one of the players of the year only so far. He's just gone about his business. He's tidy. He gets across the pitch quite a bit. He's got that presence in there that you need from a League Two player, especially in that holding midfielder position. I don't know if we can count the old Checkatrade trophy, can we, with as one of his bands, and maybe FA Cup game for the other one, and so he maybe only misses one league game. I'm not sure how it quite works, but hopefully he won't miss too much.
He definitely misses the FA Cup game. I don't think the Checkatrade trophy counts, because if you get sent off in the Checkatrade trophy, you then, you know, you don't, that ban doesn't apply to the league.
I'm pretty sure the rule, and this is going to sound ridiculous, pretty sure the rule is he's not banned for the Checkatrade trophy game, but he's ineligible to play.
Maybe he has to play as a punishment in the Checkatrade trophy game.
So I'm sure I read on Twitter earlier, guest of the show, James Hennigan, from the Chronicle and Echo, was tweeting about it and was saying, yeah, that he's not banned for the game, but he's unable to play, which is ridiculous, right?
That is a ridiculous thing. Really is ridiculous. How can you be not banned, but you become ineligible to play? The only thing I can think of is that because he'll have missed maybe a game, you know, a league game before it, that therefore he's no longer deemed as being a first team player, because you can only make so many changes, can't you, to the first team?
I think those rules have been relaxed a little bit, haven't they, as well? I can't remember the rules. I know Danny's pretty good on rules and stuff, so maybe he can shed a bit more light on the ins and outs of the Checkatrade trophy.
No idea.
It does say, I've just found James Hennigan's tweet, and he's basically saying that, you know, he knew Foley's ban wouldn't apply for the Checkatrade trophy games, but he wasn't aware he's still not allowed to play in the competition. What a ridiculous rule. I think we all agree on that. I mean, that's...
That is ridiculous, isn't it? I've just got the reasoning behind that. So the reasoning behind that is that when it comes to suspensions, the Checkatrade trophy is not deemed to be a first team fixture. And Foley is now banned from all football until three first team fixtures have been played.
So he can't go and play on the rec?
He can't go and turn out for the bat and wickets.
So he can't even play in a behind closed doors friendly then?
No, banned from all football, Charles. He can't even train. He can't even kick a ball. He can't even look at a football.
No, no one tweet Sam Foley a picture of a football just in case he gets an extra ban.
That sums it up, doesn't it? That's a ridiculous situation.
So Foley is now going to miss then Crewe this weekend, Lincoln in the FA Cup, Exeter City away, and that ridiculous weird game. So four games that he's going to miss, and he's one of our best players, I would say. Or at least he's one of the most effective players that have been in the team this season.
And thankfully, we should have McWilliams could drop into that role perhaps, and we'd need to bring somebody else in at the back. But he's going to be missed, definitely.
So we're going to talk about the youth team now. It's good to see that the youth teams are all doing well, with both the under-18s and under-16s top of their respective leagues. And on Tuesday night, of course, the under-18s played in the FA Youth Cup first round at Sixfields and made it through with a 4-0 win over King's Lynn. The future's looking very bright, isn't it, guys?
Definitely, yeah. So good to see the youth teams coming up and playing well again. Just a note to say, the winner of this match, I don't know if you've seen this, the winner plays Swindon Town or Moneyfields. That's the game we're waiting for. I've no idea what Moneyfields is or who they are, but that's who's waiting in the next round. it'd be good to have a little run, and good to see, I think there's about 500 people there at Sixfields for that one. So I think one of the things we were talking to Kelvin Thomas about, wasn't it, about hosting more of the youth and women's games at Sixfields, and goes to show we can get a good crowd in. So hopefully we'll get another one later in the season.
I think the interesting thing that happened or that I heard last week was John Brady was being interviewed, and one of the things that he said was that, you know, we're basically going to get to the point in the season for the under-18s especially where they essentially can't get relegated. And once that is mathematically confirmed, then those lads will actually be sent out on loan to play Conference South or North level style football. And then they'll bring up some of the under 16 players into the under 18. So they're not necessarily actually looking to win the league. They're just simply looking to get as fully developed players as possible, so that therefore in the seasons to come, they're actually going to be able to take the step up into the first team. I thought that was really interesting, but I also then wonder, well, what's going to happen with the FA Youth Cup? You know, it'd be great to go on a run, but what happens if we, say, get through to the sort of sixth round, let's say, where we're starting to face teams like, you know, Man United, the really big clubs that with the really, really big youth teams that are basically full of, you know, kids that came through our training facilities at the age of 14 before being snapped up under this ridiculous fair play or fair wage rule or whatever it is. You know, are we going to be wanting to, you know, actually have a first team, if you like, playing those games and see really how far we can get through the competition? I think I'd like that.
I disagree. I think that what John Brady said is absolutely right. And I think in an ideal world, we'd have both. So I think it would be great for the, you know, the youth team to go on a bit of a cut run and come up against a couple of the big boys and stuff. But actually, you know, for the benefit of the football club, what we really want is for them to develop into a player that can kind of merge into the first team squad and play in the first team and part of their development if they need to go out on loan and experience sort of men's football rather than against teams of their own age. So I think I'd much rather someone go out, or a few of them go out on loan and develop and become better players, than the youth team go quite far in the youth cup. But that's just my opinion, Charles.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Neil. So I think it's good to actually see and hear a plan for the youth team and the youth players come out. We haven't seen that for quite a bit. We've got such a talented bunch, it looks like, at the moment, that any two or three of them could come through. Hopefully, we've probably said that before, but yeah, just good to have. I think we've got the right person in place in the job that knows the local area, knows how things work, knows all the kids that are coming through, and he seems to have the right touch about him that he's going to be able to nurture these players and hopefully see them develop, whether it's in our youth team or in some of the conference north or south teams. Hopefully they'll come through.
Yeah, I definitely think it is a good thing. You know, I wonder whether it maybe brings in a bit of income for the club as well if you go on one of those cup runs. I don't know. Obviously, it won't bring in anywhere near as much money as if the first team went and ended up in the semi-finals of the FA Cup or anything like that. But it's just another side to the coin. I'm not suggesting that I would take an FA Youth Cup run over the development of our youth team as to become, you know, icons and legends of the club in future years.
Yeah, it's a fair shout, isn't it? You know, there may be some monetary benefit to the club, I guess. I don't know. Like you say, if I don't know either. It would be nice, wouldn't it, to have a couple of the youth players come and settle into the first team or even the first team squad and be around it for a while. Because I think that, like we touched on this last week, didn't we? And generally what happens is when someone from our youth team that's got a bit of talent, either, like you said, Charles, they get snapped up before we even get to see them, or they get into the first team, play, you know, a handful of games, and then they're sold on for not much money. So I'd like to see, you know, a few of the youth come through and spend some time with us so we get to experience them. And it, as the song goes, you know, they're one of our own, or he's one of our own. Fans always love that, don't they?
I think it's really interesting how, so during pre-season, Dean Austin obviously promotes two youth teamers in, is it Sean Whaler and Morgan Roberts, into the first team fold. They go away on the pre-season training week in Spain with the rest of the first team squad. And then obviously they've been on the bench a few times at the start of the season when Austin was still manager. And then we haven't really seen much of them since Keith Curl came in. And I remember we had a conversation, didn't we, when that change of manager happened. Would we see, you know, those youth team players stepping up? We obviously have done with Jay Williams, you know, getting a good sort of 15-minute spell on the pitch against Macclesfield, which is really good to see. I know that there was something about, was it Sean Whaler or Morgan Roberts had a bit of a growth spurt, I think Dean Austin said at one point. And so that has maybe, you know, pushed him back down the pecking order a little bit. But I like the thought of having, you know, a really good youth team that will allow us to then, you know, develop as a club further on down the years, whether that's in League Two, League One, wherever we might end up by the time that they're coming through. It's exciting times.
I'm going to say at Macclesfield as well, there's another player on the bench, weren't there, Neil? I can't remember what's his surname. What's his surname?
Joe, Big Joe the striker is all you'll get.
Well, I think then it's time to take a look inside Neil's post bag. Postman. Neil. Postman. Neil. Postman. Neil. His black and white cat.
Early in- This week, we decided to celebrate Halloween by gathering together a spooky Cobbler's 11. Firstly, thanks to everyone on Twitter who responded. We've had some fantastic responses. Here are the spooky Cobbler's 11, and we've also got a manager and a chairman as well. So we'll start with the goalkeeper. Had a few suggestions. One we've plumped for is David Cornhell, which I think actually was suggested by Dave on Twitter. That was it. And then followed up by the club, actually, themselves, who suggested that one as well. Beat your suggestion, didn't it, Charles, of Di Cornhell?
It did, really. That was a bit of a lame one, wasn't it? I'll be honest. But hey, it got everyone, you know, going and started the conversation.
It did, mate. It did the job, didn't it? Right back, we've got one of my personal favourites, actually, Hakeem O'Coffin.
Good one. Who was that?
That was Alex Butcher on Twitter, who accompanied the tweet with a little coffin emoji, which always gets extra bonus points. Left back, John Frankenstein. Left back, we've got John Frankenstein, which is pretty good, actually. That's from Rob on Twitter. Then we've got Freddy versus Jason Crow.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, that one.
That's a touch of class, isn't it, that one? I think that was from somebody on Twitter, Man at CNA. Final defender, we've got David Buchanan.
Just to fill the left-back space, that one, really, wasn't it?
Well, we've already got a left-back in John Frayne, so David Buchanan is going to have to play centre-back, and it's going to be a small back line. Apart from Hakeem O'Coffin.
That's fine. He can do all the headering away.
Yeah,
that's fine.
That's his job. Then we've got midfield. Now, I'm not sure about this one, so you have to let me know what you think. Matt Spooks.
Looks better written down, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not... I appreciate the effort and the thought and getting involved. It's not pronounced Matt Crooks, though, is it?
No, but fair play to Sean on Twitter for that one, I think. That was good.
I think that's fair. It's certainly better than any I came up with. So then we've got, alongside Matt, we've got Gory Ariebi, which was from Mike on Twitter.
Good one. Bit of pace. That's good.
Bit of pace, bit of trickery for trick-or-treating.
Very good. Could have had Kenji Gory as well.
Yep, that's good.
Kenji Gory, yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm.
I like that, Danny. That's a late entry there. He'll be on the bench. He's on the bench.
No.
Then we've got Nicky Adams Family, which is solid. I think that's nice.
Like it.
That was Man at CNA.
That was Man at CNA. Who was Freddy versus Jason Crow?
That was Rob.
Rob. Also good. Then we have got Ryan Gooligan.
It's my favourite one. I like that.
I like that. It's nice. It's well-rounded. It rolls off the tongue. I'm a fan of that one. That was from Andy Durant on Twitter. Up front, we've got Carlo Coffins in.
Yeah, good. Solid. Yeah.
Solid.
Goal scorer.
Yeah, goal scorer. That was from Mike on Twitter. Then we've got Eric Sabina, the Teenage Witch.
Nice.
Bringing back childhood memories there.
Let's not go there, Charles.
Of Eric Sabin or...
Yeah.
any team with Eric Sabin in gets my vote.
Yeah, mine too. I like that. That's potentially my favourite. Although there's a couple to go.
Oh.
So we're tweaking the rules slightly here. We've got a 4-4-3. So we're playing an extra man. We've got Shaun of the Dead Harrod as the third and final striker.
That was from Paul as well, that one. I like that. He had a couple of other ones which were good. I'd like to just mention Richard Hills Have Eyes. That was good.
That's good. I like that. I think he had, although there was another suggestion, I can't remember who suggested it. There was, instead of Harry Beautyman, we had Harry Candyman.
Yeah, that was Paul as well. That was, he came up with some good ones there.
We've got a couple of managers. We've got a joint management team. We've got Ian Batkins.
Solid.
Good. Yeah, I think that was suggested by a few people. And we also, alongside Ian Batkins, we've got Chris Wildebeest, which was suggested by Matt on Twitter. I think there was another management suggestion as well, wasn't there, Charles?
Yes, there was. I mean, there's a couple, really. Sam Spokes had Ian Vampson, of course, could have gone in as a defender as well. We also had Coven Broadhurst, and that was from Andy Durant on Twitter as well. So a good few suggestions for managers, I think, there.
Yeah, a couple of good choices. And to top it all off, we've got a chairman. So we've got a big boss at the top. We've got David Cargosta.
Brilliant.
Which I'm a big fan of for numerous reasons, obviously. The fact that I always enjoy it when David Cardoso gets a mention, but I like the fact that it links in nicely to the fact that he's gone into hiding and gone missing and nobody can find him. Excellent. Keep all your messages coming in. at itsallcobblers@gmail.com and via Twitter. It's been great receiving your thoughts. Just a quick apology. If we haven't got round to reading yours out, it's nothing personal. We'll make sure we try and get through to yours next week. Keep everything coming. It's really enjoyable reading them all, guys. Thank you.
Postman. Neil.
Postman.
Neil.
Postman.
Neil.
His black and white cat.
Let's look ahead to this Saturday's game at home to Crewe then. Danny, as usual, has all the stats on how Crewe have been doing so far this season. Over to you, Danny.
Yeah, so Crewe obviously one place above us after they lost 3-0 to Mansfield on Tuesday. They weren't doing too badly up until that point. Bit of a mixed bag under former Cobblers defender Dave Artell, who's in charge there. Of course, I think before Tuesday, their defensive record was about third best in the league, so they're doing quite well at the back until then. Hopefully that's opened up a bit of a hole for them. They've only won once away from home as well, so hopefully we can carry on that run. Just a few interesting players in their squad. Their reserve keeper is Will Jaskalainen. This is going to make you feel really old. He's the son, 20-year-old son of Juicy Jaskalainen, the old Bolton keeper.
Used to sign him on Football Manager.
Did you see?
Well, yeah, Will Jaskalainen. He was the son. Well, because he was in the Bolton youth team, I think, and he would rise through the levels on the game, and was like a 4-star rated goalkeeper. Obviously, hasn't quite lived up to that status so far in his career, unfortunately.
Not yet. So they've also got, I think, it's a defender, Perry Ng, and his name is literally spelt Ng. I'm not sure how we're going to pronounce that. Neil, any ideas?
I was literally just looking at that myself.
I mean, I had to double click on his name just to make sure it's not like a spelling mistake, but it is Perry Ng.
So have we got any other ex-Cobblers lining up against us this weekend then?
There is indeed. Mr. Alex Nichols there at the moment playing for Crewe. I think he only came on off the bench the other day, but he's definitely going to be a threat. Obviously he should get a good reception as always, but I think that's it, apart from Alex Nichols and obviously the manager, Dave Artell.
Predictions time then, folks. What are we going to go for, Neil?
I am going to go for a 1-0.
Win, I take it?
A 1-0 win, yeah. Well, I think we'll win on Saturday.
Goal scorer?
Yeah, there'll be one. Yep. Yeah. I'll go with goal scorer. I think Matt Crooks.
Okay. Danny?
I'm going to be going for, and I'm on a streak at the minute, because I predicted 2-1 last week, as you might remember. Haven't mentioned that yet, so I'm just throwing that in there. I'm going to go 2-0 to Northampton Town.
Both own goals, I take it?
There's going to be an own goal from Perry Ng. He's going to score an own goal. And the other goal will come from Sam Hodgson.
Obviously.
I suppose one day you'll be right, won't you? And that will be like a massive celebration. There'll be balloons up in the studio and everything for that. Yeah, can imagine. I will go for an optimistic 3-1 win, and it will be a double, a brace from Kevin Van Veen, and a... I think we'll go with a goal from Sean McWilliams. Ooh. I think he'll be playing in central midfield, what with Foley being suspended. So I think he might crack one from about 30 yards that'll find the top corner and send the whole of Sixfields into a massive rupture of elation.
Raptures.
If that happens, Charles...
Yes.
Oh, we'll do this podcast naked next week.
Right then, it's time to move on and let's join the hunt for Alistair Slow with Danny.
Well, if you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise.
Yeah, so, as you might have guessed, I've still not received any responses from the Endless Hours, trying to get hold of varying degrees of folk from Alistair Slow's past. As I look for clues on his whereabouts, the mayor of a small strawberry-enthused Cypriot town has yet to acknowledge my email. The Ghanaian Football Foundation that Slow set up must be too busy honing the skills taught to them by their fearless leader. And even Mike Ashley hasn't replied tonight to me exercising the Freedom of Information Act to ask about Alistair's brief trial with Newcastle. So where do I turn to next? Well, I thought I'd turn to someone with a little bit more time on their hands. They might be more likely to reply. I'm heading down to Somerset, actually, at the weekends for a little getaway. So who better to make contact with a view to a meet-up over the weekend than the very man who signed Alistair from the Cobblers in 2011, Mr. Terry Skiverton. So I wrote to old Skivers. I said, "Hi, Terry, /Tell/T-Dog. All right, my lover. I'm writing from one of the top sporting podcasts in the world, and I was wondering if you would have some time to answer some questions in relation to next player of yours. If you are, as I would expect from a man of your stature, a keen podcast listener, you'd know what's coming. We're on the hunt for Alistair Slow, of course." That's right, old Slow Dog millionaire himself. Mr. Ali Stairway to Heaven himself as well. Alistair seems to have dropped off the face of the earth, so by any chance has he reappeared in Darkest Yeovil? We'd love to know what happened. We'd love to know exactly what led you to sign Mr. Slow in the first place in 2011. Which Cobblers warm-up in particular were you at when you spotted his talents? Did he link you up to any Ghanaian wonder kids from his academy? And which is bigger, the crop circle in the field next to Hewish Park or Alistair's head? Is Alistair really slow or is he actually ironically speedy? And if you'd like to meet up and chat, I'm in Yeovil this weekend, so please give me a shout and we can chat over a cider. Many thanks to the It's All Cobblers to Me podcast team. And of course, dear listeners, if you've got any information yourself of Alistair, please drop us a line at the usual email address, itsallcobblers@gmail.com. You know what I'm in the mood for now? Move for some bench naming.
Prime yourself, boys. It's quiz time!
So, if you don't know already what we're talking about, this is Name That Bench. Name That Bench! Our game where Charles and Neil compete to name the players who are on the bench at a past Cobblers game. So, Neil leads 3-1 after Charles pulled one back last week. Is that about right?
Sure did.
And just to mention as well, we were talking a bit about Mihai Gerasim last week, weren't we? And he got in touch, I believe.
He did, yeah. He did on Twitter. I actually got a... the podcast actually received a direct message from Mr. Gerasim. We did shout out to him on the podcast last week. And he replied to just sort of say that he didn't unfortunately make any first team appearances for us. He was just on the bench a few times and played a few reserve matches. He remembered the game that we were talking about against Crewe, and he quite rightfully stated that Chris Dunn played that night.
Very good. Name That Bench, making players relevant again. So, this week we're going to focus on a match played on Halloween, seeing as though it's Halloween today. So, we're going back to 2009, and Halloween, obviously, 2009. Torquay United was the opposition. We were down at Plainmoor. Torquay United 1, the Cobblers 0, with Chris Hargreaves scoring the winner. I remember it well, huddled up behind that goal at Plainmoor. So, who was on the bench that day? Neil. Do you want to go first?
I will go second, please.
Every week.
Well, so far.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah, you're right. Let me have a little think. So we know that Chris Hargreaves scored.
He scored the winning goal for Torquay, just to add.
Ah. Then that makes things a little bit more tricky, I would say. I'm going to guess at Ryan Gilligan.
Ryan Gilligan was not on the bench. He started the match. He came off on 87 minutes.
Oh, it's a toughie this week.
It is.
I am... So 2011.
No, 2009.
2009, sorry. Jeez. yeah. Filling myself with confidence. 2009, which I think was around the time of Liam Davis was with us around that time, wasn't he? And I'm going to go Liam Davis on the basis that he was injured so much. I'm hoping it was one of his times when he was coming back from injury and was on the bench.
Liam Davis was on the bench and he came on for Ryan Gilligan.
Oh, get in there.
1-0 to Neil. Charles, come on.
Well done.
Looking for seven subs here, by the way. It's a seven sub game.
Oh, well, I'm going to go with the goalkeeper, I think. And
can I suggest Mihai Gerrison?
Can you suggest Mihai Gerrison? I don't think that'll be there this week, do you? Is it?
No,
it won't be again. Surely.
Is that your official guess?
It's not. No, I'm going to guess that Chris Dunn actually played in goal that night, and that his backup goalkeeper on the bench was. I don't know. Was it Jason Steele, or was he on loan and played the games that he was on loan for?
It was not Jason Steele.
I'm having a bad week.
Oh, good guess, Charles. Unlucky. I am going to guess. I'll go with Bayo in the hope that he was on the bench.
Bayo was not on the bench. He started the game.
Oh.
Who on earth would put Bayo on the bench, AD?
Well, I did. Yeah, it was a thought.
Okay, right. I'm gonna try a goalkeeper again. So, I'm kind of hoping that this one was at the right time. A chap called Simon Brown.
Simon Brown. Where did he come from? Where did he?
Left field.
Left field. He came from Brentford on loan.
Ooh.
And he was on the bench.
Oh, great shout.
Amazing.
He was rubbish, weren't he? Do you remember?
I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, he was terrible.
That's 1-1.
Good one, yep, Charles.
1-0.
Oh, right. So that's a goalkeeper gone and a defender stroke midfielder gone, isn't it? So there must be a striker on the bench. Bayo started, so Bayo would have probably played up front, maybe with Billy Mackay back then. Was he around then? I'll go Steve Guinan.
Steve Guinan. He started up front with Bayo.
Oh, what? Where's the pace in that strike force?
It's the aerial ability, though, isn't it? That's what we were going for. Headers galore.
No wonder we lost 1-0.
Yeah, the pace is on the bench. Really.
Well, in that case, then, I think you've left that a little bit open for me, Neil, I'm afraid. I'm going to say that Billy Mackay was on the bench.
Billy Mackay was on the bench, but didn't get on.
When you've got Bayo and Guinan up front, that is ridiculous that he doesn't even get the chance.
But I know, as we were learning a little bit, someone did come on to replace Bayo, and it won't make any sense. Still won't make any sense.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh.
Neil. Pressure.
Neil, anything from that?
2-1 at the minute, yeah. Oh, danger, eh? Was this around the time when we had a really really tricky player? I think he was on loan from Leicester. What was his name?
Name that bench.
Yeah, that's the name of the game, isn't it? Not Ian Marshall. He was the old curly-haired striker, wasn't he? What was his first name? Marshall. His second name's Marshall. Was on loan from Leicester. Ben Marshall.
Ben Marshall was on the bench.
Get in.
Now playing at Norwich. He replaced the one and only John Curtis. So that must have been when we were chasing the game, I would have thought.
John Curtis.
John Curtis off.
Crikey.
Ben Marshall on. If ever there's a moment where the torch is handed over. May only be a phone torch, but it was handed over in that moment. Ben Marshall never forgets that moment. We're at 2-2.
2-2, Charles, come on.
How many have we got left, Danny?
We've got three left.
Three left. I am going to go with... I think... So, we established before Ryan Gilligan actually played.
Mm-hmm.
I think then that this would have been around about the time that we had Alex Dyer. So, Alex Dyer on the bench.
We had Alex Dyer on the bench.
Get in.
Alex Dyer.
Me too.
Alex Dyer.
Alex D would have fit in that Halloween team as well, wouldn't he?
He would, yeah. Get him in.
For many reasons.
Yeah. okay, so... Ooh.
So, 3-2s, Charles. Pressure's on there.
Two left. I think we had a really bad defender on the bench back then.
That's likely.
Really bad. And it was something like, his first name was Pat. I can't remember his name. Pat Snooker or something like that, wasn't it?
Pat Butcher. Pat Butcher.
Pat Snooker or something. Something.
Snooker.
Canuka or something, wasn't it?
Are you going with, what are you going with? Pat Canuka?
Yeah, Pat Canuka.
Pat Canuka is correct.
Yes.
One more to find. Ooh. Charles, if you get this, you take home the win, not the chance.
Well, if I remember rightly from what you were saying before, Danny, we're still looking for a striker who came on to replace fan favourite Adebayo Akinfenwa.
Yeah, and of course, whoever came on for Bayo would have had to have been a top-class athlete and an even bigger fan favourite. So that's, I'll give you a bit of a clue there.
Oh, I remember it is.
Yeah, much adored member of the Cobblers' history.
I've got it.
Especially when you're chasing the game and you're 1-0 down, who do you turn to? But...
Was it Gary Mulligan?
It was Gary Mulligan.
I realise that I mispronounced his name.
Gary Mulligan.
I'm gonna claim it.
Gary Mulligan.
He's no Pat Snooker.
Pat Snooker.
Gary Mulligan. One season we had Gary Mulligan for, and he's now at Kettering, I think.
This team, by the way, that bench. Who else was in the team that night, in the starting team?
The starting lineup. This is why we lost. Dunn. Then we had Paul Rogers. Oh, we had Johnson. I think it was maybe Brett Johnson or...
John Johnson. Yeah, it'd be John, wouldn't it?
He might have been John Johnson. But yeah. Craig Hinton. John Curtis. Chris McCready. Then we had...
McCready.
Then we had Guttridge, Holt, Gilligan in midfield. And then Guinan Akinfenwa with Mulligan, Davis and Marshall.
That must have been the slowest ever team that we've ever put out.
Doesn't sound great.
Considering a year later, we were winning at Anfield.
Not one of them, you would think, not one, apart from Paul Rogers maybe, and yeah, he could run, but that was literally all he could do. None of the others have got any sort of pace at all.
No. It was basically winner throwing, Holt takes it, someone flicks it on, someone else heads it in. That's the tactic. Yeah.
And that didn't even happen on that night, did it? Oh, dear. Right, well, let's wrap things up there. Thanks for joining us for another It's All Cobblers to Me. If you've enjoyed this week's show, then do let us know through Twitter at It's All Cobblers or on email itsallcobblers@gmail.com. To get the latest episode as soon as it's released, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And here's to another good game on Saturday and another 3 points as the Keith Curl wave keeps rolling on. See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye now.
Woo!
And now let's close the door. Someone just saw Neil naked.